want this cat? Yeah, there we go. This is Freedom Fiends. I'm Derek J, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2 Gay Professional Prisoner Studios. We blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. He's selling his soul for new open source software to send bitcoins to yourself in the past. With me tonight, you heard him, Wampus Cat. Ooh, I like that. Randy England joins us from the land of Ferguson riots, the great state of Missouri. How you doing, Randy?
Good evening. I am here.
Are you safe?
And now, did you say that Michael is figuring out a way to send himself bitcoins?
Yeah, this is what's next. Is
send bitcoins to himself in the past?
That's correct. He's figuring out a way.
I would want to somehow send bitcoins to me from the past.
Oh, that would be even better. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I think you've got it. You're going to have to talk to Michael about this open source software. Maybe you can tweak it on your own. We are connected.
Well, I hope he doesn't get.
What's that?
I hope he doesn't get too far along before if he gets the direction wrong. I remember back when you signed up for to start using Bitcoin, there was a website who was encouraging people to use it at the beginning, who would send everyone a bit nickel, 1/20th of a Bitcoin. What's that worth?
Wow, that's awesome. Were you one of those people?
Yeah, I was. I was.
That's cool.
I lost my bit nickel, but I lost it.
Once. Did it fall down a drain?
Something like that. Yes.
So one of the cool things is we're talking over each other a little bit, and I love that because it means our audio quality is so high, so intense that we can do that without any chopping or cutting out or anything. And that's because we are connected tonight via Fiend Phone.
That's right.
Fiendphone.com. It's free software.
And although it's bad form to talk over one another, we do it because we can. Right?
It's fun. It's fun because no one else can. People are using Skype to connect over long distances. Skype is great, but it can't do that. It cuts the other person down. And this is really cool. So if you want to have the highest quality audio possible, It's still in development for some other operating systems, but right now it works for Windows, and that's good enough for me. So, did you watch the Super Bowl tonight? It's Super Bowl Sunday. That's the big thing.
I did watch the Super Bowl, or most of it anyway. Seems like I always watch the Super Bowl. What else am I doing on Sunday night? Until late when I have this show,
Yeah. Well, I was watching. I normally do not watch the Super Bowl, but tonight, I started going to a thing called Social Sundays here in Keene, and it's where some of the activists in the Free Stater community, people who've moved to New Hampshire for more liberty, they get together so that they can be social and meet each other. We all live our lives and do our jobs and stuff, and so it's nice to connect with people once in a while and have a drink or have some wings and talk. So, but the Super Bowl was on there, and I normally don't watch, and that's stupid. I totally didn't realize it's a bunch of muscular guys. I'm gay, by the way. It's a bunch of muscular guys running around in tights tackling each other. And then there was a Katy Perry halftime show featuring Missy Elliott and Lenny Kravitz. It was pretty gay. Not bad.
It was very colorful, if I recall.
Did you enjoy it?
I kind of like the Sharks.
Oh, the Sharks were one of the most popular things about that whole halftime show.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I want that costume. I think it's going to be one of the most popular costumes coming up this Halloween.
You think maybe there'll be one at Pork Fest or something?
There better be. I want one. I want one of the costumes to dance around in the Buzz's Big Gay Dance Party.
Well, you also are in New England, so there's a little more interest. Some nearby team, maybe somebody there knew somebody playing or something.
Oh, yeah, right. I didn't even know that until this evening, totally that New England that, yeah. was one of the teams playing. I didn't realize. But that's true. And they were really excited around here. There was some honking of horns going on when the teams won. We expected maybe there could be some riots because, you know, the New Englanders, those people do that on occasion when the baseball teams win. But there weren't any. I think it's because it's so frigid here. It is so cold. No one wants to be outside.
It puts a damper on things, doesn't it?
Kind of.
But I didn't really care that much who won, so I just kind of enjoyed the game.
Yeah. The wings and beer tasted just as good, so I'm happy.
I usually root for the Chiefs, and they didn't make it, so there we go.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's all right. You know, it's only a game, so.
It is only a game.
Stay with it.
So here yes. on this show, Worms, we talk about freedom and occasionally mention that Worms. Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
Yes, they do.
Now, I was in court this week, Randy. I had a lot. It was a very busy week in New Hampshire. There were lots of activists doing different things around the state, gumming up the works and trolling. You know what? You know, like trolling, like just making things difficult for people, making them upset just for fun. And that's only fun when you're doing it to bureaucrats and interrupting their process. I wouldn't do that to normal people in their day jobs. I wouldn't like go to a store and knock over their display cases or anything. But in the state house, you can do things like talk for a really long time about freedom issues that you care about. You can introduce silly warrant articles for town councils to consider. And they were doing all of that. But me, I went to court because a man who attacked me called the police on himself and got himself arrested. So I showed up to attend this hearing where I heard he was going to plead guilty.
You were the victim.
I was the victim, yeah. It's so weird.
What were your damages?
I guess I should back up. Let's back this up. Start from the very beginning.
All right, we're back. Go ahead.
So this guy, so one of the things that the activists have done here in Keene, New Hampshire, is started a chalk war that became pretty famous. It was actually featured on the Colbert Report, and news crews have come from all over the country to focus on this chalk war that was happening, where activists were drawing pictures and writing messages with chalk on the ground, sidewalk chalk, and some other people, mostly some locals who aren't a fan of the activists, were washing them away with water. Okay, totally innocent. Some people chalking, others washing them away. Big deal. Well, it became such a big deal that the city councilors in Keene actually proposed banning sidewalk chalk in the city of Keene. Ridiculous, yes, but this is just the degree to which it got pretty intense. Now, it was a cold war for a while. There was no violence until some people pushed a man into the fountain. There's a fountain here in Keene that's filled with rocks, and they hurt this man very badly because he was chalking. And that's just crazy. I mean, when you're doing violence against people, I get that you can use words and pictures, all sorts of peaceful methods of communicating, but when you use violence, that's not okay. So this guy...
What was he doing? Chalking in their driveway or something?
No, it was in the park in the center of town, and these people didn't like it, so they pushed him in the fountain to show him how much they disapprove of his messages, and that was not good. So he was hospitalized, and so that's what the man who pushed the young man, the chalker, into the fountain. His name is Matthew Phillips, just for the story. And I attended his arraignment. He was arrested for this crime because you can't just do that, hurt people. And it was on video, so there was no question as to who this guy was. So he was arrested and arraigned. He pled not guilty. And I wanted to go to this arraignment where you go before a judge and you say either I'm guilty or I'm not guilty. I'm going to take this to trial or not. And he pled not guilty. Now, when he left, one of his conditions was that he wasn't allowed to speak with this woman who is an employer near the where the scene of the crime happened. But where did he go? As soon as he left court, he walks right out and makes a beeline right for that place where he's not supposed to go. Now, I'm a camera around, reports on stuff, so I walked and followed him with my camera a little bit from a distance to be safe and to report on this story. He didn't like that, and some of him and his friends surrounded me and said, hey, you better cut that out. You better stop filming us, or you're going to be in trouble. I'm like, whoa, why am I going to be in trouble? And they let me know by breaking my camera and by telling me that the police were on their way. So, okay. First of all, they were claiming, Randy, that it's a crime that I filmed them out in public because their son, who was also with them, is under 18. Now, you are a former prosecutor, correct?
I am still a former prosecutor.
Right, thank you. And
I'm sorry.
No, you're. It's just like you. It would be just like a lawyer to correct me like that. Well, it's not a crime, is it?
No. Well, I don't think it is in New Hampshire. It's certainly not a crime here in Missouri. And there's really no there's no age limit for photographing a child in public.
I don't think there is anywhere, I don't know, in the world. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that. I don't think there's any restriction. If you're out in public, in the world, I mean, you're not hiding from anyone. You could put a sheet over your head if you want to, but people are going to be able to hold video cameras, and the photons that bounce off of your face just might hit those cameras, and they'll be stored forever on digital hard drives. So that's what happened. They were upset. They didn't like that I was filming them, probably because they just violated the court order that they were given not 5 minutes ago. And, hey, so I'm not going to back down. I'm not one of those guys who's like, I'm not a bully, but I'm not going to be bullied either. So I stand there with my video camera. They smash it. Or more specifically, this one guy, Raphael, does. And then the police show up. Well, I didn't call the police. They did. And then they get arrested. Oh, man. More to this story. When Fiends
returns.
There's
a lesson in that for us all.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Obama's a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. So I'm telling this story about these guys who came up and surrounded me and attacked me outside of a courthouse. It's pretty scary, Randy.
Yes, but it didn't come out as badly for you as it did for them, right?
That's right. So I was just talking about how they came over, they surrounded me, they told me, you're going to be in trouble because the police are on their way. And they thought
big
that I had
mistake.
Committed a crime by recording their son, who's an infant. And, my goal was not to record their son. I'm not some, like, crazy person walking around recording children. It was the harmful evildoer, Matthew Phillips, who pushed a man into a fountain who I wanted to record.
And the baby was just collateral damage. Yeah, right?
That's right. So, and he really was too, because his mother ended up really shouting at me, and he was of course much closer to her than I was, so he caught a lot of volume in his ears and saw something really strange unfold in front of him. So this guy, Raphael, comes up to me, stops his car in the street. He sees his group of friends, like, surrounding me, and he says to himself, "Self, you better help your friends and attack this guy." So he, like, stops his car in the street, quick pulls over, you know, makes a verbal threat to me, and then pulls over, gets out, and knocks my camera to the ground. It's on a tripod, you know, so it video records him doing this. And then I'm a video activist, so I'm prepared for one camera goes. I've got another camera at the ready. I pull out my cell phone. I hit one button, a Bambuser. And if people like safety and security and you have a smartphone, you might consider downloading it. It's a free app and it connects to Facebook. So you can hit like one or two buttons and then be broadcasting live and all your friends know about it. It's really cool. So I hit this Bambuser app and I introduce it. I'm like, "I'm live streaming here in Keene, New Hampshire, and I've just been attacked by this man." I just put him on camera. Here's the guy. And then here's the people who are surrounding me. And then a second guy takes a swing at me, says, "Get that camera out of my face." And he throws my phone to the ground. So, woo, here come the police. And my camera and cell phone are smashed in pieces all around me.
Oh, your cell phone went down too?
Both of them, yeah. So it's two different guys, both attacked a different camera. Now,
okay.
Raphael, the first guy, is the first guy, and the other guy, I don't know his name. We'll just call him Baseball Hat. Or no, it's Justin Paquette. That's his name. It doesn't really matter what their names are, but these are just some local thugs in Keene who attacked me. So the police, they know me. They know that I video record. They've arrested me for video recording and not backing down when told not to. So they're well aware of what probably just played out. I mean, if they look at this situation and they see a group of people surrounding Derek J and he's standing there with his cameras smashed on the ground, I think they can put the pieces together without getting the story from both sides. But they pieced it together. They got an interview from me and an interview from them, and then they arrested them. The group of thugs thought that I was going to be arrested. But no. I hadn't committed any crime by recording. They had committed a crime by committing assault.
Now, who was it that called the cops? Was it the Raphael, the guy that broke your camera?
It was Justin Paquette, the man who broke my cell phone. So
Justin is supposed to be a friend of Raphael.
That's right.
But Justin has just now gotten Raphael arrested and hauled to jail.
You've got it correct. That's exactly
okay,
what happened.
I think I got the picture.
Poor guys.
So what happened then?
So, you know, I get the information. I get served a subpoena from the local police that I have to attend these trials because they're I'm a witness, obviously.
You're a witness.
And, you know, so I get roped up all in this thing. And what's really strange to me, Randy, about the justice system, so this is where it begins. Like, I didn't call the police. I didn't really want to give an interview or talk to the police at all. Anytime I have an interaction with police, it's kind of a bad day. I don't want to talk to them. I just want to avoid them and live my life. So already these thugs have done me wrong, first by breaking my stuff and then by forcing me to interact with the local police. Then furthermore, I get subpoenaed, which says on the little piece of paper, "You must appear," in all capital letters, or under the penalty of criminal, blah, 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 blah. You know, bad things are going to happen. We'll haul you off to jail. We'll throw you, we'll slap a charge on you. So now I'm being levied with threats from the local court if I don't show up to this thug's trial. So, of course, I go. But I'm surprised at what I find there. I'll let you know what that is when we return.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free open source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set Liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Yeah. So, court, Randy, you spent a lot of time in court as a prosecutor, sending people away and prosecuting crimes like this one, criminal mischief. So I was
there were plenty of cases just like yours, where somebody busted up somebody else's stuff, and that it's a problem.
Well, how about stories where they called the police on themselves? Does that happen a lot?
You know, calling the police on yourself, I don't know, you know, if that happens. Well, it does happen. I've seen plenty of cases where two people get in an argument, maybe not even an actual physical fight, or maybe a minor one where there's some pushing or something. One calls the police, and it's probably a toss-up whether the one that called is the one that's going to jail.
You have to be a certain level of stupid, really.
You really got to be a certain level of stupid. I mean, I don't know how many times I've sat across the table, you know, from a client, too. I'm a defense attorney now. And said, you know, the whole thing went wrong when you called the cops. Now, not that my client, say, was the one arrested, but my client's always the one that was arrested, but often I'll have that other person in there crying that they didn't want this to happen and they don't want there to be a prosecution, and, you know, to nicely explain to them that you're the one that rang the bell. And now...
Yeah, exactly.
Dig out that you created because you were so angry at, say, this other person, and now here we are. And if you didn't want it, you should have thought about it before you dialed the phone. But there's much worse cases. You see the cases all the time where somebody has this maybe a mentally ill relative who's causing a problem and has locked themselves in a room, and they have maybe a knife or something like that. And, you know, the person, I mean, you have to feel for them in a situation like that. They call the police come, and they kill them. This happens all the time, all the time. And then the person who called the police, you know, I mean, they feel really bad. They didn't know what they could do. They were afraid the person would hurt themselves, but they end up dead. And you see that, you know, so there's varying degrees of seriousness. Fortunately, in your case, you know, one guy called the police and got his buddy arrested. It's a good lesson for everybody, for him, for the guy that was arrested. Free lesson for you, you know, since you got to see it, but, you know, you didn't get arrested. So, you know, all in all, this was a good experience.
It was. I think we all had a relatively good experience. It wasn't optimal, and I have some complaints that I'll get to. But let me just wrap up this story real quick to catch everyone up to where we are today. Is this guy was going to plead not guilty. I got a call from the prosecutor saying, hey, he's going to plead guilty on this day, so you don't have to show up anymore. I say, well, all right, I took off work anyway, so I'm going to go and record it. And so I'm there on the trial day. I see him when he walks in. I open the door for him, you know, into court. He gestures that I don't need to do that. He'll walk in later. So we're sort of like polite to each other, you know, in without even using words. He is one of the first people who has to go up to face the judge. He has a public defender that they work it out and say, okay, I'm just going to plead guilty. Yeah, I understand. I'm going to waive my rights, yada, yada. Then the sentencing happens right away because, I don't know, I guess there's no reason to delay it. So the judge asks what the state recommends. They say 60 days in jail at the House of Corrections suspended for 1 year on the condition of good behavior, a no-contact order for me, restitution paid for the damaged property, and there's one other thing that escapes me, some small thing, I forget. And I am not happy with this result, but the judge, you know, you can actually audibly hear me in the video. I whisper, like, no, to myself.
Well, let me ask you, Derek, what do you think, why do you think the court did it that way? Why do you think, what was their motivation in structuring this punishment the way that they did?
I have no idea. No, because it doesn't, it's not justice. Like, it doesn't help me any. It doesn't serve the community any. Actually,
well, the restitution was justice.
Yeah, I agree with that. The restitution, okay. That's all I wanted. I wanted my property.
How would you have done it then?
I would have said, I want $100, which is like three times the cost of the materials damaged. And that would have been, you know, enough for me to feel like I've suffered from not having this thing for so long. You know, I have to,
sure.
And you know, it's a tool I use on a daily basis. It's not like a fine picture or something that, like, oh, I just missed having that in my living room. It's like, no, this is a tool I've gone without, and I've suffered because of it. Like, I was at the state house recently doing some video recording, and my batteries died. And I ran out, and I didn't have another. So, you know, that's his fault for breaking my battery. Well, I would want that.
Aside from the amount of the restitution, in the sense that it sounds like the restitution you got was just to pay for some physical damage,
yeah,
and not for all of the time and trouble that you went through in the whole experience. But aside from that, whether the restitution figure was $30 or $300, who cares? What would you say, or what would you want to do, or what would you want done if this guy refused to pay the restitution that was ordered?
Gee, I don't know. I hadn't considered that.
Well, think about it. You know.
Well, what happens normally in those cases?
Well, what
I would want an apology for one, or maybe he could work for me. I've got some work for him to do, some indentured servitude or something. I really have no idea. Because you know the reason, Randy, is before this even went to court, he was trying to avoid it. This one guy, Raphael, now Paquette, the one who called the police, he hasn't communicated with me at all, but there's a third party who intervened, a mutual friend of ours, Raphael and mine, and he came to me and said, now Raphael spoke to me, said he's very sorry about this, and he wants to pay you restitution. I said, I'm sorry, it's out of my hands. I didn't involve the police, his friends did. So, you know, this wasn't an option, but had it been an option, that would have been the thing I really wanted, an apology, which she gave me, you know, through this third party, and restitution.
Between you.
Yeah, we could have had private justice. It could have been just him and me, and we didn't have to involve the police or anyone else. Could anyone have a record or threats of jail? I mean, he could go to jail if he has any kind of future charge or something, victimless or not.
Well, the reason, well, not only a future charge, he had conditions on that probationary period, the 1 year probation, and there would be conditions like don't get a new charge. But you can bet the paperwork also says and pay $30 restitution to the victim in this case, and that's one of the conditions of restitutions. One of the reasons why the judge did it the way he did it, of course, is to compel him to pay the restitution. Like, the judge didn't have to sit there and go and say, well, will you pay it? You know, when will you pay it? He didn't have to do any of that stuff. He just said, you pay it, and here's 60 days hanging over your head. And if you don't pay it, you can just go to jail. And so that's the only way the judge knows how to deal with a situation to force somebody to pay restitution. So there's going to be that time hanging over their head. Now, I could have suspended, I don't know what they do in New Hampshire, but in a lot of states and in Missouri, they suspend the imposition of sentence. In other words, they don't give you a sentence. They just put you on probation for a period of time, and a condition could be to pay the restitution. Now, that might have suited your feelings about it a little better if they'd have left out the 60-day sentence. But sure enough, if the guy hadn't paid the restitution in the time that the judge gave him, the judge would have come back and sentenced him to jail. It's always going to go back to the jail.
Now, he asked him, and I hate that because it's like, I made this point in the video when I left the courtroom saying, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you're the government, send everybody to jail. That's just all they can think to do. And that's their only tool. So I was upset by that because I told the prosecutor when he spoke to me, because, okay, so Raphael brought the cash with him. He brought $30 with him. It's not a whole lot of money. So he was like, he rounded up. In fact, he was charged to pay an exact amount. He was good enough to round up to $30. That because of the no contact order, he couldn't hand it to me in the courtroom. So he had to hand it to the prosecutor, who had to hand it to me. Well, that was really
that's
weird.
That's who they're supposed to do it through anyway. No, it's not weird, because if he just handed you the $30, he wouldn't have any proof that he ever did it. But if he does it through the prosecutor, then it's in their records. And
yeah, but we did it in the courtroom. You know, I mean, we're all in the same room here. That's why it was weird.
The prosecutor probably made a note, though, in the file that it was paid.
I guess so. You know, anyway, it was
a little informal, but that was all right.
So when the prosecutor hands this over to me, I'm like, jail? What the heck, man? Why would you sentence this guy to jail? I don't want that. And he's like, oh, well, it's just a suspended sentence. You know, it's just to keep him on good behavior. I mean, that's the attitude they really have.
I mean, that's the only good thing you can say about it is that, well, maybe he'll think before he assaults the next person. I don't know. He's got 60 days. You know, the only alternatives that you're up against here, you know, I ask you, you know, how would you, what would you have done if the guy wouldn't pay? And you really only have two choices. You would either accept that he wouldn't pay. Yeah. And then, I don't know, you could bring some sort of ostracism, like nobody would deal with this guy again, and he would kind of get shut out of decent society. I mean, you could shun the guy if he wouldn't pay, even though a neutral tribunal, had ordered him to do this. Or you could have said he should be forced to pay. And, you know, I don't know what you do. It's pretty easy to be forgiving when somebody owes you $30.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not as easy when somebody burns your house down and owes you $200,000.
Yeah, good point.
And then you might say, that guy is going to go and work until this is paid off, and he can do it voluntarily, or he can do it by force, but he owes me a home, and he's going to pay it. I mean, you could take either attitude, right?
I guess I could. I wish
in a free society, I mean.
I don't like that I'm compelled under this solution. Like, I'm part of this. I know the no contact order is for him, so I guess I could be like, oh, hey, how's it going, man? And I'm really sorry about how this all went. And I'm not prohibited from speaking to him, but he is prohibited from speaking to me. So we can't have a civil conversation now and say, like, hey, this is past us. You know, thank you for being a stand-up guy. And, you know, I hope this never happens again. And maybe you should consider your group of friends because they really got you in a lot of hot water here. And, you know, we can't have a conversation about these things.
Yeah, he's probably already learned that lesson.
Yeah, but his friend hasn't.
Hey, next time, don't call the cops, okay?
His friend still has court. Situation. He's pleading not guilty. This idiot never learns.
Got more fun to go. And another subpoena threatening you if you don't show.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Worms. Wampus Cat, Randy England. And I'm Derek Jane.
Here we are.
The Warrant Canary. And we're bringing it to you live here on Freedom Fiends. Man, so I was just wrapping up. I had some justice served by the government. The government got all involved and gave me some justice. And it wasn't very good. It's not what I would ask for in the free society of the future.
But you got your $30.
I got my $30. Oh, whoopee.
Hey, let me ask you let me ask you another thing and move on to another thing.
Yeah, please.
Still, though,
I'm done with this.
We're not done with Derek, though, because last time we were on a Sunday night together, I asked you about your concealed carry case where you were denied a concealed carry permit, and you were going to appeal that to the appellate court in New Hampshire. What's happened with that?
Yeah, I've done it. It's actually, I don't know what all the different levels are called, but I appealed it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of New Hampshire. So
are you one of those states where they have, like in Missouri, we have the trial court, then we have the appeals court, like the Western District Appeals Court, and then at the top we have the Supreme Court. And then I know there are some states like New York where they have the trial court, then they have the Supreme Court, and then they have some other appeals court above them. And I'm going, do you people know what supreme means?
No.
Do you in New Hampshire know what it means?
Yeah, it's the Nacho Supreme Court. And I don't know. They're a bunch of silly goons who wear black muumuus and pretend they're self-important.
But they're not supreme, though, right?
No, they are.
There's another
one after them. No, you just skip a level for gun cases for whatever reason.
Oh,
it's so important.
Oh.
It's such an important freedom.
Constitutional matter?
Yeah.
Constitutional right?
I suppose. Oh, I honestly, okay. I can't claim to know. I hired an attorney to do the thinking for me, but he's
no,
a really good
normal.
One.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, they normal skip over the, if you have a constitutional issue, they'll often skip over the mid-level appellate court and go straight to the Supreme Court. So your case is in the Supreme Court. Has it been argued yet or just briefed yet or what?
Yeah, I just sent in the paperwork. So just for folks who don't know, I'll back up and fill them in that, I did apply for a concealed carry license here in New Hampshire in the summer. And something changed last year in the language of the New Hampshire law. It's a shall issue state, or it was, until this language changed. They added some line about suitability that a local police chief could determine whether or not a person is suitable to carry a firearm concealed. Now, everyone has the right, if you're allowed to possess a firearm in New Hampshire, then you can carry that firearm openly. You can carry as many as you want, loaded, unloaded, whatever, long gun, handgun, it doesn't matter. And the police have known this for a long time. They knew I open carried for years here in Keene without any issue. But when I applied for a concealed carry license, well, now it's in the police chief's hands, and he gets to say, I don't really like Derek, so no, you're not suitable. And that's it. It doesn't go any further than that. He doesn't need to give any justification. He did. He claimed that it was because I was arrested a few times for civil disobedience, but that's a political statement. So my attorney argued in court during the appeal that, hey, you're saying that because he made political statements, he can't have his Second Amendment. So are you saying that you can either exercise one, either the First Amendment or the Second? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You shouldn't lose your rights just for exercising them.
Well, and even if it was, illegal, what you call civil disobedience, it hardly makes any sense that a nonviolent civil disobedience would have any effect on your suitability to carry a gun.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. So, I mean, I was always peaceful. I've never been accused of doing anything violent. So, I hired an attorney to take this to the Supreme Court, and they'll hear it in like 10 years or whatever. I don't know. It takes forever. Justice is so slow. And I actually predict they'll hear it sometime within the year. And I'm just waiting to hear back. What goes on is they hear some oral arguments, and then they make up their minds. But one cool part of this, they're going to have to watch my movie, Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. It was submitted as evidence. And so the five Supreme Court justices are going to have to watch my movie where I commit all sorts of fun crimes in New Hampshire.
Hey, they like to be entertained just as much as anybody.
That movie's free, you know. So if people want to watch that at home, after Freedom Fiends or some other time, victimlesscrimespree.com. You can watch the whole thing for free.
They're already talking about you at the Supreme Court. Trust me.
They should be. And, you know, they should be talking about the judge who ruled in this case because he commits a crime in that movie. They're going to watch one of their justices below them lie to the court and get a man arrested. He lies.
I wouldn't look for any disciplinary proceedings to come out of that.
No.
Worms, worms, worms.
You with liberty all across the world. So, hey, Randy.
Yes.
Wampus Cat, take us to school, will you?
I am here. We were going to talk about school, and we didn't get to it here till the last hour. But on the topic of what's called tenure, and I'm sure most people know what tenure is, it's the full permanent teacher employment policies or acts or whatever you want to call it. I think tenure is something that's probably that really only sort of picked up in the 20th century, the idea that teachers were some sort of a special class that if they could hang on and not get fired for a certain period of time, that they ought to have their jobs for life unless they went out and murdered a kid or something. You know what I mean? I mean, they wouldn't get fired just for being a crummy teacher is what I'm trying to say. And I think it kind of got started with university professors and that. Back in the old days, before they had any laws regarding it, there was kind of they had ideas about academic freedom, and I guess they would put up with certain things from professors of this or that, and would give them some protection from making little mistakes and getting fired. But, of course, you'd think any employer would do that, right? But somehow the whole thing ended up morphing. And more and more schools and then finally governments adopted, you know, particularly since the government does most of the schooling, you end up getting state statutes involved, and it's become very common in universities that professors, if they can make it up through, what, I think their seventh year, if you get your, at the end of the seventh year, if you stick around and they decide to keep you, you're in. You're in for lifetime. It's like you are, you're up there with the gods. Only federal judges have this sort of protection in this country, this world, to be a teacher with tenure. And
that just sounds stupid to me. I'm sorry. I gotta say, the natural impulse is like, I could be fired at any number of the jobs that I've had in my life, and there was no opportunity for tenure. I don't mean to sound sour, like, well, I didn't have that, so no one else should. But if I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment and put on my statist hat, some statist might say, well, schools are a type of environment. They're risky. The kids could, I don't know, they could say nasty things about the teacher that could get them fired maliciously. They need these types of protections. The teachers need to be protected from those darn students who would do them harm, and the bureaucracy above them who would play politics and try and get them fired for malicious reasons.
Would you want to be the manager of some establishment that was not allowed to decide who was going to work for you? I mean, the principal of a school or the school board for a school district ought to. I mean, who's controlling this thing? Who's running it? The employees or the people that I assume that the employees there, for whatever good motives they may be there for, and I'm sure that most teachers care about the kids that they teach and that sort of thing, they're not there for themselves. I mean, we don't hire them if they're in a school that we're paying for, or the government doesn't hire them so that they can have jobs. They're hired to teach kids and for kids to learn. And if kids don't learn, the first thing that ought to happen is somebody needs to get fired. And so tenure, you know, you said you're offended by it. Well, I am too. It's it just stops the normal processes that would happen in any employment situation of people that can do the job staying and being rewarded, and people that can't do the job and frankly would be a lot better off moving on to a career that they're actually good at from doing that. And so it's a problem. And where it's gotten into be a bigger problem, it was beyond the universities, because they sort of had, they kind of were building up kind of a tenure, almost a tradition of, you know, having tenure built into contracts and that. And as you think about it, there's nothing wrong with contracting with someone, an employment contract that says, I'll work for you and you can get rid of me whenever you want, you know, during the first 7 years. And if you still like what I'm doing, then you guarantee me, you know, employment for the rest of my life until I retire. I mean, if you're an employer and I'm an employee, that may or may not be a good idea for you, the employer, but you ought to be free to do that. And if a private university wants to do that, you could question the wisdom of it, but you certainly wouldn't question their right to do it. But then this whole thing is spilled over into... It got all messed up when the government got a hold of it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, fair point. And that's in my other... I'm still wearing my status hat and playing devil's advocate. That could be another objection that I would have to adjusting or messing with tenure at all is, look, Randy, this is the situation that we're in today. Yeah, you can play theoretical freedom world, but that's not where we live today. We have government involved. We have tenure. And if you just got rid of it, then all of these great teachers would be purged by all of these nasty, incompetent administrators. So we have to keep it.
No, the great teachers are being purged so that the incompetent teachers can stay. You have the situation where the state governments have started, they have statutes that describe what the tenure system will be in every public school system in the state. And in the state of California, it reached this completely ridiculous level of a teacher would start out and they would have to, if they weren't fired within the first, I don't know, year and a half or something, or a little more than that, but less than 2 years, if they weren't fired partway through the second year, they had tenure for the rest of their life. I mean, that's just completely insane. And then they coupled this tenure system with another system. See, there's another way that teachers could lose their job even if they're tenured. And there's not much you can do about that, because if a place loses population or they lose money and you have to downsize, say, a school system, and certain teachers have to be let go, and say they're, you know, you can let go the teachers that don't have tenure, but if you had to dip into the tenured teachers and get rid of some of them, in the state of California, you were absolutely forbidden from firing the bad teachers, unless they were not tenured, and then you could always fire them, whether they're bad or good. But it was a pure seniority system, so that if you had a junior teacher who was really a great teacher, it could be the greatest teacher that ever walked the earth, and you had an old teacher who was tenured, you had to fire the good young one and keep the bad one that was there. That was because that's what the law was. And there was a lawsuit filed back in 2012, I think, in Vergara versus California, that challenged this, I don't know, 16 or 18 month tenure rule where you could get tenure. It was supposed to be if you made it to the end of your second year teaching, they would let you, then you would have tenure. But as the law ended up being written, if they hadn't fired you by March of your second year, then you were in for life. And a bunch of, I don't know how many, 8 or 10 or some number of students brought a lawsuit in the state of California claiming that these California, they called them dismissal statutes, or the ways that you get rid of a bad teacher, were unconstitutional for several reasons. One was that it tended to, it was so impossible to fire a teacher once they'd been there, you know, through March of their second year, that it adversely affected the students, and especially I'm not sure why it affected the poor students more than the other students, but they said that it affected the poor and minority students especially badly. I think maybe because they were taking these bad teachers and sending them to, you know, schools in poor areas or something. That's possible. But they particularly were saying that it was hurting the poor and minorities, and that it was just so impossible. And then the flip side of the coin was the fact that even if you got into the downsize situation, they couldn't even fire the bad tenured teacher. They had to fire the good teacher that hadn't been there, even if they'd only been there, you know, 1 month less time than the senior teacher. So the whole thing, it ended just this last year in June, I believe, or in August, was a judgment on it in the trial court, and the judge found that the California statutes were unconstitutional. And I'm not sure how they're working out the remedy. I'm thinking that they were thinking more in terms of tenure should last longer, like maybe if it would last like 3 years or 5 years or like 7 years, as it is in universities, some other number would be reasonable. Now, I wouldn't agree with that. I think tenure is just a ridiculous idea. I don't understand it. And that could just be me speaking, a person who's worked for other people, you know, in large chunks of my life and never had anything to keep them from firing me except for me doing my job.
How does the rest of the world get by without tenure? If teachers think it's so essential that this exists, how were there teachers before the 1940s who kept their jobs for life? And how do people in the rest of the working world keep their jobs without this concept of tenure? I mean, why wouldn't the plaintiffs in this case attack tenure at its core and not just say, oh, it should be a little bit longer, let's argue about, you know, the size of the hole in the boat, instead of just saying, no, we need to not have a hole in the boat?
Yeah, and, you know, and the corruption, of course, all set in from the fact that the schools are public government institutions, and the customers, the students, are taxpayers who are owed their constitutional rights, which just gums up the whole thing and makes the analysis almost impossible to deal with. We can talk about it some more.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
That's right. We're here.
Why aren't canary?
We have tenure.
Doing
tenure till the end of this broadcast. If we get through the first 20 minutes, Michael promised not to take us off until the 2 hours is up.
If only that were true.
That's not a very secure job, though, when you think about it.
I live this show as if we could just be cut off at any second, honestly. We have to keep all the overlords up top happy, so...
Well, the only thing that can't be cut off is our paycheck.
Right. Yeah, lucky us. Maybe my maybe it'll be doubled.
Yeah, that can't happen either.
Yeah.
Well, so, I guess the math could work.
So, yeah. Well, I can't really tell. I went to public school, so I don't really know the difference. Which is government school. I shouldn't. Shame on me, and shame on you for not correcting me, Randy. Because it's not public school, is it? It's government school. There is a difference.
No, I don't know.
I think there's a difference in the language
you use. Public school would be.
What?
I guess a public school could be a school that says, hey, we'll take anybody.
Yeah. A public school would truly be public. I can't walk into a public school. There would be so many cops on me so fast. You know, you can't walk into a so-called public school. They're all locked down.
You'd be trying to photograph those children in there.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, I kind of do want to see what goes on inside that black box. They don't let anybody know. It's so weird. Like, okay, there are only a couple places where you can't have a gun in New Hampshire. And one of them is public schools. Why is that? That doesn't seem very safe. All the rest of the state is very safe because people can defend themselves, but everyone's disarmed at these schools. I mean, what are the kids going to do if someone doesn't obey that crazy sign that says, oh, no guns here? You know, fortunately, that hasn't happened in New Hampshire. There have been a couple of incidents, but anyway.
Every time I walk into the hospital where my wife works, and there's the big sign that says, this is a gun-free zone, you know, and I'm thinking, well, I'm glad I left it in the car, but... That sign isn't telling me anything, but it's telling the mass murderer that this is a, you know, this is like one of those places where you can go and shoot, you know, the moose because there's one every 3 or 4 feet because nobody can shoot back at you.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with the government schools. That's just one of the many problems because I think. So I was putting on my status hat earlier, and I've taken it off over the break. So now I'm back to hating on government schools.
Thank you.
Yeah. I can only wear it for so long before I turn into a pumpkin or an Obamanoid. So, yeah, I just hate government schools. I tried so hard. Just a little personal experience. I tried so hard. Did you go to a government school, or were you one of those fancy pinky-out private school kids?
Fancy pinky out.
You're sipping tea.
I went to a Catholic school, so we had every.
Oh, so it was knuckles out.
We had the rich kids. We had the poorest kids. We had the whole cross section. They were just kids that went to that parish mostly.
Okay,
and so it was pretty much of just a cross section economically. I mean, we had. Just kids, you know, nothing special about it. But it wasn't run by the government; it was run by nuns.
Yeah,
and
which can be worse than the government.
They could be tougher than the government because they, unlike the government, of course. Back when I went to school, because I'm so old, I think teachers were allowed to hit anybody anywhere.
Yeah,
that they wanted. But private schools. I don't know. I have no complaint about the nuns that taught me. By the time I got up through eighth grade, and then I went to the public school, they gave me a good education. When I slipped over into the public schools, there was no problem at all. So I can't complain about that. My parents and the nuns there, they took care of, you know, what I was there for. So I didn't complain. But then I got to the public schools and barely got out of that, and I probably was severely damaged before it was all over.
Oh.
Because I spent a long time in there. After that, I 4 years of high school, and then went to college, and that was all public school. So,
you know, at least your Catholic school didn't look like a jail. In the U.S., the same people who build prisons are the same ones who build schools. That's no accident. I mean, they look exactly the same. That was my first thought when I went to jail, and I've been to jail many times for peaceful acts of noncompliance. But when I was in there the first time, I was looking around saying, like, this kind of looks like my kindergarten classroom. I mean, the same cinder block walls, the same nondescript tile floors, the same recycled air. These places look like prisons.
Ask permission to go to the bathroom?
No, fortunately, they put my bathroom right next to my bed, so I got to share that with my cellmate.
Did they tell you when you would eat? Did they tell you when you would eat?
I guess I had more freedom in school, actually.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Worms. Talking about jail, school, same thing. Hey, and I made a misstatement before we went back to the last break, where I said I had more freedom in school. I meant to say I had more freedom in jail than in school, which is true. Because Randy, you were asking me, did I have to ask permission to use the bathroom in jail? No. Did I have to raise my hand and ask permission to eat in jail? No. I could eat whenever I wanted. So,
but I bet you had to stand in line a lot while you're in jail.
Yeah, and I had to stand in line. Right. Yeah, I did.
Just like in school.
But actually, it is a lot like in school. But actually, I also, that's one respect that I had more freedom in jail as well. Because in the jail I was in, it was maximum security. So they had a central command where they would watch you in all the places through the hallways. And all the doors were locked, of course. But once you reached one, they would know who you are and what clearance you had, and they would just open it. You know, you didn't have to say anything or do anything. It was just, you reach the door, they're watching you, they open the door for you.
It clicked.
So,
and the fact that
you can't
nobody
do that in
had
school.
To say anything, the fact that nobody had to say anything, the door just unlocked, reinforced to you that you were being watched at every moment.
It sure did. And in fact, yeah, they would call out to you through speakers if you were doing something wrong. Like, you had to walk against, this is something that you do in school too, you had to walk against the wall, you know, when you're in lines together. And
kind of like having to drive on the right side of the road, you mean?
Yeah. So I would mess with them a little bit. And yeah, exactly. It's like driving on the right side of the road. It's so weird because who am I going to collide with, really?
It's not that dumb an idea, though, right?
Well, yeah, it's good to have standards, but I would mess with them.
Everybody else stays on their side.
Well, I didn't mind, and there wasn't really anything they could do to me further. I mean, I'm already in jail, so I would do cartwheels and somersaults through the hallway, and they would yell at me through the loudspeaker, like, you can't do that. Get against the wall. And, okay, I'll obey. But, and you mentioned that you were in Catholic school growing up, and you have a website called freeisbeautiful.net.
Freeisbeautiful.net. That's my website, and that's the name of my book. That was how I kind of got into libertarian, I don't know if you'd call it activism of a sort, but I've always been serious about being a Catholic Christian and take my faith seriously. And I also grew over time to take my voluntarism, my libertarianism, my anarchism, whatever you want to call it, quite seriously too. And at some point, you have two things that you are important to you, you're going to get into some dissonance unless they are compatible with one another, right? If you have a girlfriend here and a girlfriend here, it could cause a problem, you know, if they found out about each other or something like that. But anyway, I started studying, libertarianism and seeing how that reconciled with Christianity, and I was finding things about St. Thomas Aquinas, who wrote that the only things that should be considered criminal are things that hurt other people, things like murder and theft and things like that. I'm going, wow, that's exactly what libertarians say. And there are so many parallels, and if you go back to the New Testament and you see the teachings of Jesus in that, and you look at something like, there's the parable of the woman that was the adulteress that they brought to Jesus, and the law required that she be stoned to death. And they brought the woman to Jesus and said, this woman was caught in adultery. You know, what should be done with her? And Jesus looked at them and her, and he just said, well, why don't whichever one of you is without sin cast the first stone? And everybody knows the story. They're just
what an epic burn. Burn from God.
Yeah, they dropped their rocks and all left. And pretty soon Jesus looked up and the only person standing there was the woman. And he said, what, is there nobody left here to accuse you? And, you know, she said, no, Lord. And he did say, then go and sin no more. He said he wasn't approving of her behavior. He just didn't approve of it, the criminal sanction.
Yeah.
And didn't approve of her being stoned for it. And you have to assume that if that person had been standing there for any other victimless crime, like drug use or gambling or drunkenness or you know,
those weren't crimes in those days, though, were they?
Well, no, but some things might have been, but he would have had the same attitude. If it wasn't a good thing, he would not have approved it. You know, he wouldn't have said, oh, it's really good that you gambled away, you know, your family's you know, money that they had to live on this month. Well, no, he'd have said that's not good, but he wouldn't have punished you for an illegal poker game or drug use or prostitution, any of those, what we would call a victimless crime. So anyway,
well, this is good. I did want to just make sure that people know about your website, freeisbeautiful.net, because it's got a lot of good resources, not just for Catholics, but for anyone. It almost sounds like a punchline or a setup to a punchline. Like, so a Catholic prosecutor and a gay civil disobedient do an anarchist radio show. They ended up talking about how jail has more freedom than government school and said Jesus was a libertarian. I don't know.
Yeah, the punchline. Yeah, we need to work that into going into a bar or something.
right. Then we go into a bar.
Yeah, the minister, the priest, and the rabbi walked into the bar. The bartender looked up and said, is this some kind of a joke? but anyway,
so
no, but school. Anyway, if anyone has any interest in either one or two things, if they were Catholic and want to see how that is truly compatible with being libertarian at liberty, then go there and read that website. The book is free, an audiobook there, the audiobook is free and the paperback is cheap and the Kindle is even cheaper. And if you're a person who doesn't believe that a Christian can be a libertarian, then go there again and find out that you can. I'm really on your side. I'm proselytizing for libertarianism. I want converts. And
that's
why I'm here.
I hear a lot of division among the... I am an atheist, and I hear a lot of division among the atheists and religious in the anarchist community. I don't think there's room for that. There's no time for that. We all agree on not hurting each other and being nice and civil and everything. Like, can't we just move on?
I'm here to tell them that that's the truth, and I'm going to leave them alone.
Amen.
So... what's your complaint, you know?
Preach.
So anyway, I'm happy with that. Well, anyway, yeah, we were going on. Thanks for the plug for my website. I appreciate that.
Hey, man, anytime. I got a website, too. If people like it and like the things I do, want to see me running around getting arrested, derekj.me is my website. And I blog there every day. I've got updates about this guy, this Raphael guy who came and assaulted me, and that's all on video. And you can read my ponderances on the criminal justice system, and it's fun. So, you know, we all have websites and they're fun, and you should check them out. I
know this is kind of sick, but I half the time laughed reading, watching your victimless crime spree.
Oh, I laughed too. And it's hilarious.
I know it wasn't funny to you when it was happening, but I thought it was a riot.
It was. It was funny when it was happening. The whole thing was hilarious.
Good.
You know, because I'm running from one of my favorite scenes. I think a lot of people's favorite scenes is I'm running from these fat cops, and that's resisting arrest, but. I just felt like I was in the right. You know, I didn't do anything wrong. I was recording out on a sidewalk publicly, and they didn't like that, so they came and started chasing me. Said, "Derek, stop!" But they couldn't chase me. I outran them in like clunky boots in the middle of winter, and they're supposed to be in shape enough to catch real criminals. You know, here I am, just some guy with a video camera. What if I was in danger? So anyway, go watch it. Victimlesscrimespree.com. It's free. I got a fun story for us while we're still on the subject of school. Before we move on, an article. You know this Common Core stuff, Randy. Everyone's all upset about it. Do you have school age kids?
Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, so they weren't in school.
I had four of them.
Well, what about at the time? Were they talking about Common Core when your kids were in school?
No, they weren't. They weren't doing Common Core.
It's like a new push because they're like, well, government school is so messed up. You know what the solution is? More government. Let's, because we've all got this core and we have it in common. I don't know. We need like the federal bureaucrats in charge and less accountability. So it reminds me of this Onion article that I remember reading years ago. So I looked it up for this episode, and I just want to read a couple of sentences from it. The headline, increasing number of parents opting to have children school-homed. According to a report, and remember, this is a joke article. According to a report released Monday by the U.S. Department of Education, an increasing number of American parents are choosing to have their children raised at school rather than at home. Deputy Education Secretary Anthony Miller says that parents who school home find U.S. households to be frightening, overwhelming environments for their children, and feel they're just not conducive to producing well-rounded members of society. I mean, how true is this today? I know it's a joke article, but, like, isn't that what parents want? Aren't they asking for longer school days in these government schools so that they're essentially daycares for them?
It really is. And, you know, that you were saying whenever there's a problem, then the answer to that problem is more of what caused the problem to begin with. In other words, more government. You know, you fix a bad law with another law with another law. There was a have you heard of Richmond's law?
No, what's that? You mean the city of Richmond?
Sheldon Richmond, you know who he is?
No. Nah.
He's a libertarian. I think he's doing some work.
Oh,
with,
great. now that I admit it, I don't know him. All the libertarians are going to be mad at me.
No. And also, I think he's still with the Future of Freedom Foundation, or he was. Now, he's a real good guy and very, very sharp. He's been around in the movement. He may be older than I am. I mean, that's how long he's been around.
So what's his deal? What's his law?
Well, Richmond's law says that no matter how much the government controls things, right, any problem will be blamed on whatever little sliver of freedom remains.
It's so true. I mean,
and that's just absolutely the truth and is always the answer.
Yeah, so, like, one of the problems is that government takes kids away by force. It threatens most parents. You know, if you don't send your kids to the government school or any kind of school or let the government know what you're doing with your kids during the day, they put parents in jail for this, right? Isn't there some, I forget what the term is, but...
Truancy?
Truancy, yeah, that's the one.
Ferried or something or other. Yeah, some states are pretty laid back for homeschooling. Some of them are pretty nasty.
Yeah, so they start out by stealing your kids, threatening you with jail if you don't give it to them, and then they're like, yeah, let's make this day longer, and the parents cheer because it's like, well, they're already in daycare anyway. It's a lot easier for me.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
FiendPhone is free open source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set Liberty back 2,500 years.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Come on, Wampus Cat, give it to us. Give me some of that sweet Wampus Cat. All right.
Oh, my. I'm here.
I want some of your meowing.
Was I dozing there or something?
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that set everything right in the world.
That felt good, too.
Thank you. Yeah. So I was bringing the people down in the last segment, talking about how government is getting on everyone's way and ruining everything and making the world unpleasant. Well, I've got a solution. In this segment, we call it Redemption in the Third Act. Things are going right in New Hampshire. There's the Free State Project. People have moved to New Hampshire for more freedom because they don't like the way things are going in their own state. And they're having fun with local government. This there's an article that just came out by a local progressive, a Democrat in New Hampshire. And he is upset about these Free Staters who have come and moved in. And headline: Grafton's Free Stater Band of Merry Pranksters Targeting Upcoming Town Meeting. And they're just so afraid of what these people are doing. And they're not using violence. They're just using the system.
For some reason, I here in Missouri have actually heard of Grafton. Is that some really tiny little burg there in New Hampshire?
Yeah, Grafton is the home of what
they
call
tiny.
Yeah, it's what they call the Free Town Project. And I think
Free Town Project.
I think there's only like a couple hundred people in this town. It's really rural. And
so what is afoot in Grafton?
Well, because it's so small, when you go to one of the town meetings, all it takes is like, I don't know, 10, 20 people to show up and vote for things, and then they pass. Because it's not one of those towns where a city council decides things. It's a place where the people actually decide things. And so there are rules about it, but then they take a vote, and whoever has the most people wins. And that really makes some of the people upset. So, like, there are people like me who use civil disobedience to make a point and try and increase freedom. And people don't like that. They say, you should use the system. And here are some examples of people using the system, and they're still not happy about it. You know, the people who love government are going to get upset whenever you increase freedom. So here's a couple of examples of what the Free Staters are doing in Grafton, coming to us from a blog written by a guy who hates them. So here's a couple of examples. Last year, Grafton residents organized and turned out to defeat the Free Stater initiatives. They authorized additional spending to buy a new police vehicle and tow truck, pave roads, and make improvements to the town's fire and ambulance building. Of course, implying that the Free Staters don't want paved roads or fire services. Of course they do. They just don't want the government to provide them. They could be provided for voluntarily. So here's what they're working on this year. There are 20 petition warrant articles that the town is going to be considering, thanks to these Free Staters. One of them is to reduce the town's operating budget by 10% for the next 3 years, eliminate taxpayer funding for the public library, and slash the police department budget to $10,000. The warrant articles would also prohibit the police chief from prosecuting any crime in which the victim is not a natural person.
Hold on just a minute. What would that mean in a town like Grafton?
Well, it would mean that if a person got a speeding ticket and no one was harmed from the act of them speeding, then they would not be able to prosecute that crime.
Okay, okay. Well, that would be an improvement, wouldn't it?
I think that would mean more freedom for the people.
Although, what I guess what I was thinking of, not so much the victimhood, you know, when the government is always the victim in any crime. I mean, even in the case where the guy had to pay you the $30 in restitution, the name of the case wasn't Derek J. Freeman versus Raphael or whatever his name was.
Yeah, good point. It was the state
of New Hampshire against Raphael.
Yeah, you know, this would also mean that you can't prosecute someone for possession of marijuana because the victim is not a natural person. It would be the state.
That would be good. That would be great.
Well, I hope we've come
somewhere with this.
Yeah, I hope they do too. You know, even if they don't, it's funny that it makes people upset that they can put in these bills. We just need more people to come and have fun with us up here in New Hampshire. I hope you'll join us, Randy.
Go Grafton.
The free town. There's a lot more fun things that you can read about. We'll post them in the show notes of the Freedom Fiends. But I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight and given you a little bit of joy knowing that there is some freedom to be had out there and that it's a lot of fun.
Hey, good to be with you tonight, Derek.
Rock and roll, Randy.
You bet.
Peace.